Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Justine Mutolo. Welcome to the Miss ADD show. I'm really excited to have Michelle back again today.
Hello.
Michelle's on the line already. So we're going to spend this entire hour and a half just really focusing on 504 plans and IEPs. And I would welcome whoever would want to call in. If you have some specific question that you want to ask Michelle, who's a special ed teacher, she's fabulous, or myself, or the both of us, the number to call in is 917-889-7025. So please feel free during the show to call us up. So let's get started.
Yes.
Okay, so I thought maybe what we would do, Michelle, is start with 504 plans because to me that's like the entry level.
Yes, that's the entry level.
So what would, from a teacher's standpoint, what would you be seeing in a child that you would want to maybe call the parent and highlight some things to them?
And this is a child before a 504 plan.
Yes.
Yes. When you see it, usually with a child that I might feel, because I'm not a doctor to diagnose or have the credentials to diagnose a child, but just being a special education teacher and being in the classroom for 10 years and seeing, observing a certain kind of behaviors and certain kind of characteristics or academic performances in the classroom, I would first, seeing a child that might be not being able to keep up with the class.
Okay. Keep up, like, academically?
Academically with the class.
Okay.
And maybe even looking at some of the, like, the standardized scores, the STAR test.
Now, here's a question. Let me stop you for a minute. So, from my understanding in going into schools and doing these things, so when the standardized scores and the academic grades don't kind of line up, is that when you're seeing that there's maybe an issue here?
Yes, absolutely. You know, usually as teachers, like, you know, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but it's a good way because you tend to gossip about certain students.
Right.
And I mean that in a really good way, especially where I'm at. You know, teachers will go, I don't know what's going on with this kid. And then another teacher goes, yeah, that kid is doing the same thing in our class.
Okay.
And then looking at their academic scores, yeah, they might be doing really bad in the classroom, but then you look at their standardized scores and they're like advanced and proficient.
Right, exactly.
You know, and then you kind of look at the home life, you know, and you kind of look and say, okay, well, what, you know, are they just not doing their homework? They don't want to do it.
Right.
You know, you have to kind of look at a lot of different things.
Right.
But usually when you can see it, you know, when it is a child that they're all pretty even key, like the standard scores, the academic performance are all on the kind of the same level.
Right.
That's when it's like a red flag. And usually what we'll do is we will have something called an SST,
right,
a student study team. And I think they're going to start calling it something different. But at this point, we call it SSTs.
Okay.
And we get together and as
Who's in that meeting?
Every single teacher that child is involved with.
Okay.
And we study the student. We look and see, you know, this is where they're at. This is how they're performing in my class. This is how they're performing in my class. So and so. Like, and the reason why I say so many different classes because I'm in middle school.
Okay.
So I've been on our SSTs for 5 years at this
now,
school.
Now, are the parents ever allowed to come to an SST?
Yes. What we do, we like to get together first and kind of, because you don't want to, like, invite a parent and, you know, not have a really good game plan.
Or picture.
A picture of this child.
Right.
So what best practice is we will have our own team come together and talk about it and say, you know what, I think it's time for us to really, we've done this intervention, we've done this intervention, we've tried this. None of these seem to be working. Let's call the parent in and see what's going on. And then we have a second, SST.
When the parent comes in.
When the parent comes in.
So let's go back for a minute, because when I was talking also about behaviors, so if you had a child who could not sit still, if you had a child who couldn't attend,
yes,
if you had noticed that a child was daydreaming a lot and you had to constantly bring them back to remind them where they are, look at me, I'm talking mm-hmm. kind of thing. Is that something else that would be a red flag to you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. You know, if people listen to this before, I push into regular ed classes. So I push in and I accommodate and I modify and I support the children that have IEPs, but also, of course, children that have all children that are in there. And there was a particular boy last year that just could not attend, and I've always heard his name, you know, and I didn't know who he was because he wasn't an IEP kid. And, you know, they would always talk about this one student, and at this point he's in eighth grade. And since sixth grade, I always heard about him, but I didn't know who he was. And when I went into the class, I'm like, you know, I didn't know his name, but he was just couldn't attend. He was off, like, you know, just not paying attention.
Right.
The notes, like he would forget, like, oh, wait, what? I was supposed to take notes when all the students are taking notes at the same time. And they had told me his name, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is the student. But I think what had happened was they had asked the parent to come in, and the parent wouldn't come in.
Oh.
And so this child never got the help. But it went like red flag when I saw this kid. I'm like, oh my gosh, we need to help him. Like, he really, so after that, I would pull him with me and my students because I knew he wasn't going to get the work. So the reason why I bring that story up is because I think that it's so sad that, you know, you do have these students and parents don't want them to be labeled, and you see how hard they struggle.
And
you
know, see, that's part of the issue that I struggle with a lot of time with parents, because they're so terrified of, as they call, the label, that they're fearful that this is going to follow their child throughout their life. And the bottom line is, when you have a child mm-hmm. or an adolescent that's struggling, you want to do everything you can to help them be successful.
Absolutely.
So they don't get into drugs and alcohol or eating disorders
yeah.
or any of those other anxiety-provoking things that could cause you to run off and do.
Absolutely. And this particular boy, he, because I would help him, he would eventually come to my room and say, can you, I didn't do this, you know, Miss Michelle, I don't have this, can you help me?
Huh.
And I knew he was forgetting because he had, I mean, to me, I think he had ADD.
Right.
And I said, you know, okay, don't worry, you know, here, let me give you what you need. And then he would go on. But now I bet, you know, he's in high school and it's just,
oh, wow.
It's really sad. But seeing that, this boy could have benefited from a 504 plan.
Right.
Now, I know a lot of the teachers accommodated him in there.
Right.
Because they knew how he was, because, like I said, I heard the name of
right.
the gossip. And when it did come around, I went, wow. But also, you know, maybe he probably should have gotten a little bit more help.
Well,
than
it could be that he needed some testing done to
yes.
see if he had, you know, learning disabilities. So let's get back.
Okay.
So you see these behaviors in the children, or you see that they're not keeping up in class. Maybe you're noticing that they may possibly be dyslexic. Whatever.
Yes.
So you're going to then call, or the school's going to call an SST.
Yeah, you're going to bring it up to, usually it's a school counselor.
Okay.
You bring it up to the head of the department of the SST, but is usually the school counselor.
Okay, so
and
you all
you're
going to
put their name in there.
Right.
And then there's usually set times where, which are best practice at different schools, they should be, meeting at certain times one day a week to discuss the student.
Right.
And then try different interventions before you get to the calling of the parent. You know, say, okay, well, let's try to move him or her up to the front of the room and see if that works.
Okay.
Let's give the student extra time to see if it works.
Okay.
Maybe the student might need...
Give them an opportunity to walk.
Yeah,
take a walk.
Yeah, you know, they're just, you know, every child has different makes and molds of
right.
their personality, and if these interventions don't work,
how long do you usually wait?
We usually do. We meet. It's usually about a month, 30 days.
Okay.
Of using this
intervention,
different interventions.
Okay.
However, it's not that we aren't checking in every week to discuss this kid.
Okay.
So, because we meet every week.
Okay. So let me stop you for a minute. So that, for those of you who are listening out there, that's what the school would do.
Yes.
From a teacher's standpoint. Now, let's talk about from a parent, because I'm a parent along with being a coach. And when my boys were struggling in school, what I did was I called the school counselors. They were both in elementary school at the time, and said that I had just had them both diagnosed. They both had ADD, and that I understood that what I needed to come in and talk about a 504 plan.
Yes.
And what the school told me at that time was that they were all going to get together, and they were going to do the SST and have the teachers and the principal and whoever else, because they were in elementary school at the time, and then they would get back to me. So I think it took a couple of, probably 3 weeks before I heard back from them, which was kind of long to
me. Yeah, that seems...
But, you know, I was new to this whole thing, and that's why I love to help people, because being new, I didn't know that I could go back up there in a week and say, what's going on?
Yeah.
My kids really can't wait 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But we did, and... we put together a 504. So talk about, for everybody, what your role would be when a 504 plan meeting is called. And this is after the child is diagnosed, usually.
My role is I'm the special education teacher that is in on the committee.
Right.
It's usually, and it's my role in there is to help facilitate the appropriate, appropriate accommodations for the child. So if a child had ADHD, because of my credentials and my experience, I would be the working with the team to make sure I appropriately give the right accommodations that would fit a child that has ADHD. So from the SST, usually we would develop it with the parent. So that's where we would be. But if a child has a 504 or has a diagnosis, comes in with the diagnosis, a 504 goes in through our school within a week.
Okay.
So
one of the things that happens, and I'm sorry that I left this out. This is important, but when a parent takes a child to either a pediatrician or a psychiatrist for diagnosis, they're given the Connors rating scale.
Yeah.
You're familiar with that, right?
Yes.
Okay. So the Connors rating scale is just a checklist of different types of behaviors that you're seeing, and these rating scales also are given to the teacher.
Yes.
And anybody else that's significant in the child's life gets a copy of these scales, and everybody fills them out, and we see if there is a vast difference. Most of the time, they're not
about
different.
The same.
And so that is a big part of the diagnosis process.
Okay.
Once they're diagnosed, and depending on is it ADHD or is it ADD and attentive, there's different kinds of accommodations.
Exactly. I mean, you know, and it is the child's being. You know, every child that has ADHD, you know, or have different characteristics.
Yes.
You know, maybe a child wouldn't benefit from being in the front of the room because of their temperament of, you know, not being like right in the front.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need to be in the back. Maybe they need to be, maybe they have ADHD and have sensory things going on or ear things going on, and they have to be away from the door.
Right.
You know, where, so there's just so many different things that are involved, and that's why everybody who works with that child needs to be at that meeting. I usually am necessarily not the person who even really knows the student because I will do my observation, my observations, but this one boy just happened to be really lucky because I was pushing into the class. But, you know, my data is from all the meetings that we have and I'm part of. I hear about this student and I would go in. So when it does come that time, it's the team that would decide, you know what, I see this child being more successful and from the rating scales, you know, having these accommodations. Once those accommodations are, you know, discussed and they're approved by everybody, you know, and parents sign off on them, then when they're implemented, seeing if they work, you know, but they should always be revisited to make sure.
So let's just go through them for a minute. So one, of course, the number one is extra time for tests.
Yes.
Okay. That's something that whether you're inattentive or hyperactive, you're going to be eligible for.
Absolutely.
Okay. So let's just start with hyperactive. If you're hyperactive, most of the time you want that child in a place where you can see them.
Yeah.
So you can direct them back because they may be looking around, they may be starting to talk because they can't really hold it together. And these children right at this moment are unmedicated.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the other one for hyperactive, especially in elementary and middle school, would be give them a break to take a walk around, whether you send them to the office with a packet or you let them just, I don't know, how do you do that?
To me, I think the most important is for them to go and to a quiet place.
Okay.
A child that has ADHD or ADD, being in a classroom is extremely hard to take a test for a child. But I know that a lot of kids don't like to be pulled out and go, oh, you know, be taken away from where they're at. But the distraction is always, and if they're not medicated, it's even going to be harder for them to concentrate because as soon as somebody gets up, like, oh, that person's done, or, oh, you know, they can get distracted so easily.
Yeah.
And so, but, and you don't want to disrupt the other students because that's not fair as far as that. But if a child does need that type of support where they have to get up and take breaks, I would just encourage them to take it in a quiet place. And usually schools, we have a testing center.
Right.
So
what about that? That was very important, but I was more on just during the class time.
Okay.
When a child, let's say you're doing math or you're doing English and the child is kind of bored and can't attend and is trying to sit on its feet, standing up on the chair, you know, do you give them a break? You know, is that part of the accommodations? Do you say, when that child needs to stand up and maybe do some jumping jacks or walk to the office, how does that work for the other kids in the class, I guess, is my question.
It depends what grade level, you know, because in middle school, I've never worked in elementary school, only in a different kind of summer school setting. And it's such a smaller setting that the kids can get up and, you know, if they need to do jumping jacks or if they need to go take a walk, you give them a chore to do. Those things are really easy to do. But when you're in middle school, it gets a little bit more difficult because if you ask them to get up and move around, socially, you know, they don't want to look odd or weird or anything like that. So, but I think giving them some jobs to do is really smart.
Okay.
You know, and I hate to say it, it doesn't really, I think if that is the problem, I think a child probably needs to ask, there's got to be some kind of system. Like what I'm trying to say is like if a child does have that where they need to get up and take breaks.
Right.
You work something with the teacher.
Right.
Saying, you know, they need to use the restroom and they should be allowed to say, can I use the restroom and go rather than say, I need a break, because then the other kids are like, what?
Right, and then they feel different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
And it's such a tricky one as they get older. But
even in high school, I've got a kid that I'm working with right now who really does need those kind of breaks, but it's very difficult in high school because you talk about standing out.
Yeah.
And they don't want to feel that way.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just saying that might be an accommodation in elementary school, possibly in middle school.
Yes, it does, definitely in middle school.
Right.
But with like our students, we work something out of when they need the break. You know, maybe the student, we give them those breaks, but sometimes students won't take them. You know, they want to get through the time, you know, that they need. But there are those occasions when they do need them.
Okay.
And there's a system in play that child we have with the teacher, and they know, okay, go ahead and go.
Right.
They nod their head, and they leave.
Okay.
You know, and then come back.
So, okay, we're still on 504.
Okay. Yes.
So let me just think of, I was just thinking of another accommodation. So most of the time, especially young kids, but even high school kids, these are kids, ADHD, some of them have oppositional defiant on top of that, or they may have that underlying anxiety. And they're at school all day, and they're holding it together, right?
Yeah.
Now they have to come home,
yep.
and they have to do 2 hours worth of homework, which I tell all the kids I work with, if I ruled the world, there'd be no homework.
Yeah, I agree.
But I don't rule the world. Okay?
Yeah.
So I can't do that. All right. So can we reduce the amount? Explain that one.
It's not always the especially middle school and high school, it's not always the best one that people like. But reduce shortened assignments.
Right.
You know, cut assignment in half. You know, just depends on the student. You know, instead of doing five paragraphs, maybe doing three.
Okay.
As long as they're getting the content and the understanding of what the assignment is, absolutely.
Or odds and evens.
Yes,
in
odds
math.
Yes, odds and evens. Because if a child doesn't know how to do the first one, then they're really not going to know how to do the rest of the 50
right.
that a teacher asks to do.
Exactly.
You know, and it really depends on the make of the student, you know. And, you know, you always don't, you know, that's one of the things is you want to push, even if they do have ADHD or ADD, you want to make sure they're pushing themselves to the max of what they can do.
Right.
You know, you don't, like we have reduced and shortened assignments many times, but, you know, you want to see what they're capable of, how much they really can get done.
Right.
In a certain amount of time, and then as soon as that you can see that max, you know, you cut it.
Right.
You know, and that's the whole process of a 504. You know, when it's brand new, you're still trying to learn to see if these accommodations are working.
Right.
And if they're not good. So you always should revisit these accommodations
30 days.
Within 30 days.
Within 30 days.
Yeah, within
okay.
30 days.
So here's a tricky one, too. One that my boys had growing up, but I never let them know they had it. And that was extra time for homework.
Oh, yeah.
So I never let them know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I didn't want them to use that as an excuse.
Yes.
Oh, I have it on my – no, you don't, because they had an IEP. So, but if something came up, like my younger son struggled with depression.
Uh-huh.
So if I saw that one night he came home and he really just wasn't himself and wasn't feeling good, I would email his teacher and let his teacher know he didn't do his homework tonight. He will get it done.
Yes.
I promise. He usually had a couple of days to hand it in. So that's an accommodation.
That's
okay.
A very good one. But that's a smart way to do it.
Right.
Because you don't want a child to take advantage of, like,
no.
Oh, I got it. Because that's part of life. You know, you got to
right.
get things done when they get done. But we all run into those situations where we all need extra time to do something sometimes. You
exactly.
know?
And so the other one would be extra time for long-term assignments. If there was something that, you know how they used to have social study projects that may be 3 weeks out.
Yeah.
But here's something else, breaking down those
yeah.
projects.
Absolutely.
For the school to give it to the child in chunks,
mm-hmm.
a piece at a time, so they don't get overwhelmed.
Absolutely. And that's kind of a hard thing for a child that has a 504. You know, when a child has a 504, they necessarily don't have a case manager or an advocate at school. So it's the teacher's job to make sure that they break an assignment down into pieces
right.
for them.
Right.
But it's so important. Or even giving them a timeline. Okay, by this date, you should have this part done.
Right.
You know, by this date, if you're not to this point, then, you know, you better hurry up and get to that point. Giving those kind of timelines
right.
to complete an assignment as they get older. You
right.
know, but as a maybe in elementary, definitely breaking into chunks, going into middle school, breaking into chunks, but teaching them the strategies to be able to finish, within a week, I should probably have it at this point. And then within another couple another week, I should be at this point.
Right. So for those of you who are listening as parents, okay, this is what I would do. I would take my child's assignments when they were in
mm-hmm.
in elementary and middle school, because by the time they get to high school, because I taught them how
mm-hmm.
to do it, they were doing it for themselves. And I would take the long-term assignment, even the ones that were broken down, and I would just put it on paper for them.
Oh, it's so important for...
And say, by this date, this
mm-hmm.
much has to be done. Don't look at the rest of it, just
yeah.
this much. Even the pieces that were broken down.
Yeah.
So they got really used to
mm-hmm.
looking at things in smaller segments, and that really helped them not to shut down.
And that is so important for children with ADHD.
Yes.
Because it's like, the first of all, their brain is going, you know, faster than, you know, some people, and it's like so overwhelming, and it's like, whoa, I have to have this done by then. Well, I don't even know where to start, and it's like you have to slow their brain down and don't even worry. You, like you said, taking, just cut, saying, don't worry about this.
Nope.
Just finish this by this date, and then we'll go to the next step.
Exactly.
And the next step. And then once, because if you don't, it's, they're going to get so overwhelmed, they're going to shut down, and they're not going to want to do it.
Right.
And it won't get done. If
right.
it does get done, it's going to be all over the place, or it'll get done at the last second, at the
right.
last minute. So, oh, it's so important to break things down into smaller parts.
So besides those accommodations, I would think that really for the 504 plan, is there's another one that I think of all the time, and I've gotten it for kids with IEPs, but I'm wondering about if we can get this one, and here's what it is. So the kid has a short-term memory issue, big time, okay? And so what we decide is what they need, and my boys had this, is especially in math, but again, they had a documented learning disability.
Yeah.
They each got to take one index card to their test, with prompts, like formulas for their math, or in Spanish, like when they had to conjugate verbs or tenses or those kind of things. And especially in this world where short-term memory, that working memory number is very low.
Yes.
So your IQ is a 120, your working memory is an 87.
Yes.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Okay, you've got a really bad short-term memory. So you need prompts, because on top of that, you know you're going to have anxiety.
Absolutely.
Because you know that you're forgetting things. So I'm wondering, is that kind of accommodation ever possible in a 504? Because the only time I remember implementing something like that was when it was we were doing an IEP.
Well, any kind of accommodation can be implemented on a 504.
Okay.
As long as it fits the need to benefit the child.
Okay.
Because it is a legal document, and
right.
it is, you know, it's not just tailored for, you know, oh, you can only have these accommodations and that's it. Like, you know, like there are checklist of things.
Right.
But if a child does need that kind of support that will make them successful, oh, yeah.
Right.
It should be put in there.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. And that's a really good idea.
Yeah.
You know, I like that idea.
Yeah, because you're not cheating.
No.
You're putting formulas down because the anxiety has gotten so high. Although I do want to give everybody a heads up who's listening. You want to really not talk as much about anxiety, more about working memory. Because if the school feels like this is more related to mental health, like anxiety, depression, unless you have an IEP at that moment, then the accommodations aren't really going to happen.
Yeah.
You want to more keep it on
the working memory.
The working memory than on the anxiety. If your child is bound to have anxiety, 99% of these children do, and adolescents, but I wouldn't bring that up as the big issue.
Yeah. Working memory is a better way of saying
it. Because now in California, was it AB 3236 that they got rid of?
Yes.
Okay.
Mental health.
So that's the other reason why I wouldn't, especially if you're living in California, I wouldn't be talking about that at this point in time, because then they're going to wash their hands.
Yeah, because it's AB 3632 has fallen back on the district. So anytime there's any mental health things that need to be addressed, the district has to provide the service and the money that is going to provide it.
Exactly.
That's why you don't see a lot of kids that go to residential treatment anymore.
Wow.
That's why you don't see a lot of kids that get the mental health help.
Right.
And the medication.
Right.
Because it falls back on the school district now.
Right. So if it falls back on the school district, how, let's say there is somebody who really needed it. How would they go about getting that?
Well, I can speak from our district.
Yeah.
We have hired in our own team of people. Like, we have different kind of we have a program called TIDES, and I don't know what the abbreviation is, but that's a program for children that probably should be residential treatment, you know, sent to residential treatment, but obviously they're going to try to get away from that. And they go to this place called TIDES, which is a place where they get the academic support. They get the mental health, and there's like a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a counselor.
Great.
There's tons of people that are in there, and it's very small class sizes.
Okay.
Now, this child has to be, I had to send a child there, has to be to the extreme.
Okay.
However, every district has taken, I would love to know what other, if anybody's out there wants to call, how if they ever experience this in their school district, how they run it. They really have really tightened up the way Torrance has to try to make sure that that doesn't, because if it eventually says that this child needs to go to residential treatment, the district will have to pay for it.
Okay.
You know, and that's a lot of money. So
But and they don't have the money to do it.
No, but I'm pretty impressed of what, you know, Torrance has done, and how, you know, and they go on like a level system, just like if you're in a residential treatment, you know, or even outpatient treatment, you know, they have a level system, and they mainstream them back into, you know, the high school or in the middle school eventually if they get to a certain level.
Right.
And so it's all based on the same kind of philosophies and of a treatment center.
Right.
But, you know, they're saving their money because they're hiring their own people.
Yeah, because it's really sad because some of these children, adolescents, really need this kind of help. And they're, you know, and many times their families just can't afford that.
Okay.
And
it's so expensive.
Very expensive. Okay, so we're almost done with the 504.
Yes.
So those accommodations, preferential seating, extra time for tests, you know, break time if they need, whatever level they're at, it would be handled dependent on whether or not they're in elementary or middle school or high school. Extra time for long-term assignments if they needed extra time for homework. Breaking down possibly less homework because the child is struggling with holding it together at school and then gets home and is having meltdowns.
No taking support. That's another one.
That's a big one.
Note taking support.
Yeah.
You know, if the child needs a copy of the notes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I can't remember if you said this one, but being in the classroom, where they should be seated is just like the most important.
Right.
One of the most important things. You know, away from distraction, which is kind of hard when you're in class, but. You know, that is the concentration part is so important.
Yes.
You know, so preferential seating and note taking support. You
right.
know.
So that's really we've covered the gamut there.
Yes.
Okay. So 30 days go by, and this 504 plan that we've put into place. I'm a parent. You're the teacher. I call you up and say, you know what, Miss Michelle, I'm just really noticing that this isn't helping, and you say, I'm noticing the same thing.
Yeah.
So I say to you, well, what can we do? What's the next step? And you
revisit as a team.
Okay.
Everybody get back together, and all the teachers get together, of, you know, anybody who works with that child, and talk about each other's experience, and then change the accommodations if that's needed.
Okay. Now, if we're seeing that the behaviors are escalating, that the work is really not up to standard, how do I put in writing to the school that I want this child tested, my child?
If you're in a school that is, the school should probably be able, after doing 504 and having all these interventions, usually if you've exhausted all your interventions, usually the school would say, let's test. But if it doesn't happen that way, then yes, you put it in writing that it's time to start testing, because usually the accommodations will benefit some way.
So
if the child isn't being, and if the parent is doing their part too, when the child goes home, the homework, you know, none of that is a factor into what's going on with this child, you know, that they're not doing that well at school. And then, yes, like it, usually it's the school that would say, you know what, let's test.
Okay, so what you're saying is rare to me, because in the 20 years that I've been doing this, I'm usually the one that initiates with the parents and tells them, write the letter to the school. The school, I've had one school, and it was in California, in Torrance, that initiated testing. Other than that, it's usually on the other side. So
Yeah.
Just for the parents' sake who are listening, what should the letter say?
You know, it could say something as simple as, you know, dear whatever school district, you know, or the school system, I would, you know, I am the parent of whatever the child's name is. I would like my child to be fully, have a full formal
assessment.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to say informal because that's not the correct verbiage. It's a formal assessment. And you state what areas you want the child. A full assessment is all areas.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe sometimes that you wouldn't really necessarily need a speech assessment or, you know,
OT.
OT assessment.
Right.
You know, just depends
OT
on every child.
OT is occupational therapy.
Yeah, occupational therapy. Yeah. I had my son tested, and of course, I didn't feel that he needed a speech assessment, and I didn't feel that he needed an OT assessment.
Right.
So I said I wanted full formal academic and behavioral assessment.
Okay.
And then within 60 days from the date you...
Which is the law.
Yeah, which is the law.
And for those of you listening that don't know this, if you put it in writing to the school, it has to happen.
Yeah, and it's 60 school days.
Right.
So say if a spring break or Christmas break come into play, you have to kind of take those ones off, you know, and start counting after you get back.
Right.
So it's 60 days. Usually, I mean, that's, I get blown away if I ever hear that that doesn't happen.
You just got blown away because I told you about somebody who was,
yeah.
They got turned down.
Yes. Getting turned down, it just,
in the
it
wonderful
just doesn't happen.
LA Unified.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So don't worry because I'm going to go back in and I'm going to fix this because
yes.
It makes me very angry when I see that a teacher saying, well, I'm just going to give up on this kid mm-hmm. and the school doesn't want to test. And it's really difficult for me because many times it's in the minority groups.
Yeah.
And it aggravates me because I feel like they think the schools feel at times like they can get away with this
mm-hmm.
because people don't know what they're talking about.
Absolutely.
Right.
Oh, to all the time they don't want to put the extra effort into
exactly.
getting something done. And you see it all the time. And that's why as parents, you have to be on the ball. You just have to.
Right.
It's just our job as mothers, as fathers, and whoever guardians you are. You know, you have to be on top of it
right.
and not necessarily be a tiger and, you know, be rah, you know,
no,
at
no,
people.
No.
But you need to get the job done
right.
and you want to get it done right. You know,
right.
My son, I had put a letter in for him to be assessed when he was in kindergarten. And then and even I tried all these different interventions with him. His teachers did all these interventions with him. And nothing was working. And I don't know why we didn't do an SST on him, but it was kindergarten, and usually they say kindergarten, you know, oh, they're not developed yet. So I had him fully assessed, and they still thought I was weird about it, but I don't care. And they assessed him, but because I was special ed teacher, they didn't formally, like she did the assessment, but she just came up to me in the classroom and said, oh, look, you know, he got a 90 on this, and he's fine. Well, they never had a meeting with me after. And at that time, I just wasn't, I don't know what was going on in my head. I'm kind of dumb that I look back at it. And then third grade comes around, you know, and I mean, every year it's always been something that has been difficult. There's some
right.
thing that he's doing that I just can't get it, and the teachers help me, and they give him certain interventions at school that they're just wonderful. So then a third grade came around, and his teacher again said, you know what? I honestly think you should have him tested again. So when I had him tested, when they exceeded the 60-day, and I couldn't believe it. And so Redondo School District is fabulous. His school is fabulous. I love everybody there. But I was shocked that they knew I was a special ed teacher, that you would go longer than 60 days.
Wow.
I had to prompt them, like, hello, are you – well, we have a lot to do. And I think they probably knew that, well, I don't know what they were thinking, but I have a
that
feeling.
You might understand or
yeah,
be more
like,
understanding.
Yeah, more understand. I don't know. And I was just, I'm like, you know, you have hit like way longer than 60 days. You know,
right.
I'm not going to go sue you or anything, but that's just not right. You shouldn't be doing that. Oh, we have somebody out, you know, somebody has a broken leg, the psychologist, and that's not my problem. That's what
exactly.
I told them. I go, it's not my problem.
Right.
You know, you hire somebody else to come and do the assessment. You don't wait that long. It's that's ridiculous. So, I mean, it was probably 2 days after the 60-day that I got on them, you know, because I was just shocked that they would. But in the end, it all worked out, and they did a very good job with him. But, you know, you really do just shows, you know, even in a very, you know, school district, you can trust everybody around you, you know, but people make mistakes and things happen, and you have to, even for me, you know, you got to be on the people that are working with your kid, you know.
So here's something I want everybody to be aware of. If your child gets tested in your school system, they are responsible to redo that testing every 3 years.
Yes, triannual.
That is part of the law.
Yeah.
So if they don't do that, then you've got something that you can squawk about.
That's big time. I've never heard anybody doing that one. Well, this probably does happen.
I actually had a woman the other day. I went to a school meeting and found out that the kid was put into a special program, and there was never a full assessment done on him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're trying to figure out what happened there in Torrance. Something happened, yeah, but we're trying to figure it out. Okay, so here's something I just want to add about testing, okay? One of the things the schools do not do is the TOVA, T-O-V-A. The TOVA is a specific test done. It's done on the computer for ADD, ADHD diagnosis.
Really? I've never heard of that.
Yes.
TOVA.
And it's done usually all the time by a psychologist, okay, administered by a psychologist. Or there are some psychiatrists who do it because they like to see how the child will react to this testing on meds and off meds. So there's another diagnosis tool that if you get a full assessment done by the school but you want a TOVA done, you could go to a psychologist and get that done for pretty cheap.
Oh, yeah.
It's not going to be a full battery. The other thing you want to keep in mind, so when you get this testing back and if you get a full assessment, so they're doing IQ testing at the same time, which is either the WISC-4, the WAIS, or the Wyatt, depending on the age of the child, when you see a processing problem, in that number, you're going to see a specific number for processing. And if that number is low in comparison to the IQ number, that is a dead ringer for ADD. Processing is a big, big issue. The other thing is, we talked about this before, working memory. You want to make sure that when you see that working memory number, that's another red flag that the executive function in the brain, the frontal lobe, is not working properly. Please don't get upset. I'm not talking about specific brain damage. It's just not firing the same way that somebody who doesn't have ADD.
Yeah.
So in those cases, because we're going to start now with the different disabilities, and if your child doesn't have a specific learning disability, you can get an IEP based on OHI, other health impairment. So if your child's numbers are off, if there's 15 points more spread difference between verbal and perceptual IQ, or the working memory or the processing number, then you can get an IEP for OHI, other health impairment.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a good, you know, a good example is like if a child gets in math, scores a 90, in the 90 percentile, then you get, then they do the reading and they score in the 50. There's a huge, what's going on there? There's a huge discrepancy between math and English.
Right.
You know, we always all say, you know, I'm better at math than I am at language arts or English. It's always that thing. But when there's a huge discrepancy, that's where you go, there's a big gap.
Right.
And that's where you would put in the OHI, which is OHI.
Right.
And say, you know, this is where we need to help this child close this gap.
Right.
And that's where the goals and objectives come in.
Right.
But
let's talk for a minute, too, about, because some of the kids that I've worked with have had specific.
Mm-hmm.
For example, my two boys were both documented math learning disabilities on calculation.
Yes.
So that is your basis math, your addition, your subtraction, your multiplication. They had a very difficult time with that, which in turn really hurt them when they were climbing in the math world.
Yes.
Okay. So they were both documented very early and had goals, but between you and me, the goals were a joke.
Yeah.
On the IEP. And a lot of times the IEPs I see, the goals are a joke.
Yeah.
So we got to talk about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I want parents to make sure.
Oh, yeah. Those are the most important thing. That's
that
why
they're
you have
involved
an IEP.
With the goals. So there you have a documented math learning disability. So their IEP was written for that. Then you have children who have written language expression. So what is that?
Written language expression is expressing themselves on paper, basically.
Okay.
You know, and they could, maybe it could be a speech thing where, you know, they can't express themselves verbally, so even just putting it on paper, it's hard. But written language is writing expressively. Now, I'm not talking about, like, higher level of writing at all.
Sequencing.
It's sequencing, yeah. You
right.
know, you might go from, you know, if you're writing something, a child that might have this issue, you know, I'm just going to give you an example. Like, I wake up in the morning, I eat breakfast, I go to school. We know those sequence.
Right.
But when it gets on paper, you know, it could be just totally discombobulated.
I go to school, I eat dinner.
Yes. So that processing of the sequence part is just so off.
Right.
That that is something that needs to need a lot of help with.
Right.
So you would write a goal that would help that child strengthen that ability.
Right.
You know, it might be something that they carry on with them forever. You never know. But you can strengthen it and make it better.
Right.
And make it better for them for their life as they get older.
So let's hold off for a minute on the goals. Let's just keep going on the different disabilities.
Yes.
So, okay, that's written language expression. So we have that and we have math. Let's talk about reading comprehension.
Yes.
Because I see that. And most of the time, when there is a comprehension issue, we're looking at dyslexia maybe too. Spelling.
Yeah.
Dyslexia.
Yes.
Right? That's how we can really kind of pick that up. And also seeing how kids write their letters, if it's backwards.
Yeah.
Or the whole thing. What do you do for a child who's dyslexic?
Well, you know what's interesting is that we don't, I've maybe, my 10 years have gotten maybe 4 children come through with dyslexia. But every child that I've seen, like sometimes will throw me off. I'm like, this child has dyslexia. And, you know, you get this perception that a child with dyslexia is going to write backwards, is going to read backwards, and they're going to, you know, but it's not always necessarily that, you know. And I've had a child that just switched letters around all the time. So instead of writing the, they would say
T-E-H.
Yeah, like T-E-H, like totally just like change a word around and just blow me away. Because, you know, you're just so used to hearing that dyslexia is doing things backwards. And it's not necessarily that. But as far as the writing process, it is, and reading, it's just so sad. But with the writing, taking things slow, you know, having them write what they need to write, but then going, reinforcing it by going over the writing with them and showing them the correct way to doing it. It takes so long, but it's so important for the written part, the oral language part.
And so what do you do with reading in people who have dyslexia? Because I know my soon-to-be husband grew up in having dyslexia. He's much better now, but when he was in school, he still can recall, which is sad, that when the teacher would call on him to read, he would be so anxious and so fearful because he wasn't seeing the letters the right way.
Yeah. Like don't ask him to read.
Right.
I wouldn't. Right. I wouldn't. I wouldn't put a child.
No.
I mean, it's not a big deal that a child would need to read in front of the class. And if a teacher knows that a child has dyslexia, why embarrass them? You know, that.
What kind of accommodations would you do for that?
I would say pulling the child out of the class at a certain point.
Okay.
You know, and having them read with one-on-one with somebody.
Okay.
Because it's so. It's something that they have to have support with,
okay.
You know, because they don't know what they're seeing unless they have a good strategy of what, like your husband probably has obviously
yes.
a good strategy of how he works it.
Yes.
But if they don't have a good strategy of how to work it,
right.
then, you know, starting with pulling them out, either the special education teacher pulling them out if they have an IEP or, you know, and just reading, you know, reading it with them.
Right.
And reinforcing what, you know, no, that it doesn't say that, it says this, you know, because they've got to have some kind of survival
right.
skill that will get them through.
Because they have
success.
To read.
Yeah, there's just no way around it.
So, and the other thing I was thinking about was that another form of, you know, reading comprehension issue could be short-term memory.
Yeah.
So you read a paragraph, and you are supposed to answer the questions, but you can't remember what was in the paragraph.
Yeah.
So what kind of accommodations would you do for that?
I would have the accommodations, I would say, wait, I'm sorry. So you're saying that if a child reads a paragraph,
right.
they don't remember what they read.
Right.
So basic, the processing part and the
exactly.
reading comprehension.
Yes.
A lot more explaining,
okay.
I think. Having a child, because I'm totally notorious for it. When I was a kid, I had an IEP too. So a teacher would have me read a paragraph and then say, what did you just read? But the whole time I'm thinking of something totally different.
Right.
As I'm reading everything correctly, but I had no idea what I just read.
Right.
And I think is just keeping that up, you know, having a child read a paragraph. Okay, tell me what you read.
So verbally.
Verbally. Oh, totally.
Because most of the time with the working memory, if it's a perceptual working
yeah.
memory issue, it's reading and it's going in, but it's so lost you can't retrieve
yeah.
it.
But you know what? The comprehension, and I tell these to my students all the time, is that if you read, and I know kids with comprehension problems hate reading,
right.
but if you read, it will get better.
Right.
If you read independent, if you make your child read every night, it gets better.
Wow.
It definitely, I mean, it's like, I always tell the kids at school, I always go, try an experiment, you know, like, yeah, I swear, just read every night and you will see schoolwork getting easier.
Right.
Because it's just.
So any kind of book.
Any kind of book, yeah.
Okay.
Any kind of book. But I usually, students want to read what they, you know, you probably want to give them something that is attractive to them.
Yeah.
You know, even if
yeah.
it's a magazine.
Right.
You know, for them to read. But that definitely strengthens the comprehension.
Okay.
You know, it's not like if a child has a comprehension disability that it's always going to be that way.
Right.
You know, it's just how hard you push it and how hard, you know, like my son, he used to hate to read. And I would make him read every 20 minutes, every single night. And his comprehension was last year, that's where we were struggling with. And, you know, I got on the ball and I said, okay, you're going to read every night, 20 minutes. And he fought me and fought me and fought me and fought me. And now he picks up the book and he reads. And he can tell me what he's reading. And now, this year, it hasn't been an issue. I know school just started, but the teacher says, oh, no, I don't see much of a comprehension. It seems that he's understanding. Only sometimes when he's in class, he's not totally always focused. You know, he's looking at everybody else. But
so cute.
Yeah.
But then, ladies and gentlemen, one of the reasons that this happened was because she was consistent.
Yeah.
About him reading.
And they will, and that's what parents usually do. It's
yeah.
like, well, they won't. Well, too bad.
Oh, I love
I know.
That. That's because the kid runs the house.
Yes.
And for those of you listening out there, please don't allow that to happen, because the only thing you're causing for your child in letting them run the house is insecurity.
Yeah.
They don't feel safe at all
yeah.
when they're running the house.
And I give my son choices. Like I said, okay, you get to pick 2 days out of the week that you don't have to read.
Great.
And he usually picks Friday and Saturday, of course.
Great. Great.
So, and I'm like, sure, that's fine. And I give him the thing that he loves the most, which is Minecraft. I'll give him those. He's able to use it for that time.
Great.
Because, you know, that he did well.
Right.
And so I don't want it to make it a torture thing, but, you know, yeah.
No, but it's consistency.
Yeah.
And I think that what we have to understand is that in order for anybody to be successful in life, there has to be consistency.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to digress for a minute because I have to share this story with everybody. Last weekend, my 22-year-old was down from San Francisco because he's in a band and he plays the bass, and they were down in L.A. performing. And so we took him to dinner afterwards, and he said to me, you know, Mom, you know, really, all in all, I think I had a really great childhood and adolescent years. But there is one thing that I have to tell you that I kind of makes me a little angry. And I said, really, what's that? He said, you did too much for me. You never taught me how to do anything. And I said, oh, okay, well, give me examples. You know, my laundry. So I said, oh, wait a minute, though. And this is for everybody who's listening, because my son told me the reason he shared this with me is he wanted me to help other people. So I said to him, but when I would ask you to do something, you would get angry. And he said, and I manipulated you.
Yeah.
So for everybody who's listening, if you ask your child to do something that is going to help them in life, like do the laundry, not at six. Nobody's asking them to do laundry at six. But as they get up into the teenage years, you know, 14, 15, 16 years old, they certainly can start doing things around the house. Even younger, the dishes, setting the table, those kind of things. And if they push back, remember my words.
Yep.
From my son's mouth, they are manipulating
you. Oh, totally. It's funny you said my son who's in college, he said the same thing. He goes, you do too much for me. And I went, so I thought it was a wonderful idea for him to go away to college, because, and then I was able to realize, wow, I did do everything.
Yep.
And how much it is hurting them when you do. But as mothers, I'm not the perfect angel. I still tend to take.
yeah. But you know what? I had to digress on that, because coming from a 22-year-old's mouth, I really appreciated the fact that he shared that with me, because it was honest.
Yes.
He was being honest. But he also said, I really think you can help other people. So, okay, we digress for a minute. Let's get back to
IEPs.
All right, so besides written language expression, math, we've got reading comprehension, we've got dyslexia, we also have autism spectrum.
Yes, big
okay.
one. That's a
so
big one.
So you can either be
autistic-like.
Right.
That's what it usually is.
So it's either, so there's a spectrum, okay?
Yes.
And on the if you're looking face at a piece of paper and you draw a big arc, if you look at the left side of the arc, that's nonverbal learning disability, NLD. That's what my younger son has. And that is autistic-like, you know, Asperger's-like.
Yes.
Not even, but not severe, okay?
Yeah.
But he also had that on his IEP as well. In the middle of the arc is Asperger's.
Yes.
Okay, which I know you see a lot
of.
Oh,
yeah.
And then on the other side is autistic. So what would you do accommodation-wise? Because socially, these children really struggle. So what would you do as a teacher? What do you do to help these children?
Oh, see, and it's such a big spectrum.
Right.
That every child has their own accommodations. You know, it's like, you know, if a higher functioning child is extremely smart.
Yes.
And probably smarter than I am.
Yes.
You know, and making them feel like I have two boys that are in my study skills right now who are high in autism. And for them, their accommodations they have very little accommodations. They can achieve to the point where they do have extra time if they need it.
Right.
They do need a system of how something is going. Like, you know, the mom had sent me a message and said, because in the accommodations it said that, you know, needs to, as you know, as a school year starts, needs to have like kind of a, God, I can't remember what it was called, guidance towards the schedule. And I couldn't understand, if I had the accommodation in front of me, what it actually meant. It was in the specific part in
right.
the bottom of the accommodation, like comments. And when now that he's starting, because it's my first year with him, he's like totally thrown off with his new schedule. So he's getting tardy to every class, you know, and I'm like, she had emailed me Friday and said, you know, he's already been tardy to this class. And I'm like, oh my gosh, okay, now I'm understanding what you meant by this. So I went to the teachers and I said, look, we have to erase these tardies because he's getting all stressed out. He didn't want to tell me because he's new with me.
Right.
So then what I did on Fridays, I said, okay, let's work together and figure out what routine, because he had a routine all last year. Go to this class. I'm going to leave
because
my backpack here.
Because they're very rigid.
Very rigid.
Right.
So, especially the high functioning. Very rigid.
Yeah.
But, you know, with children like that, it's like, it's definitely their make. You know,
right.
you don't, you know, it's hard to say this child would need these kind of accommodations. If you had a child that was maybe in the middle, maybe academic, you know, usually children on the higher functioning don't have tons of goals and objectives.
Right.
When you see a child that has three or more goals and objectives, you know you need to service them, you need to support them quite a bit.
Right.
When you see a child that is high-functioning Asperger's, usually it's time management.
Right.
Goals.
Social.
Social goals.
Right.
You know, and things like that. So you kind of need to work in it. In that kind of realm, I guess.
So one of the things that I do notice about kids, especially with Asperger's, which is the middle, is
yes.
they can rage, they can get angry very easily. And much of that stems from their inability to regulate when something happens that they don't totally get.
Yeah, and they don't believe it's right. They don't get it.
Exactly.
And so
exactly.
they feel that people aren't listening to them.
Something happened in your classroom.
Mm-hmm. I know exactly.
Tell that story.
Wait, which I know what student you're talking about.
The haircut.
The hair. Oh yes. Okay. There was a boy. Well, I'm thinking of another situation. I thought maybe you were in with the fourth period when you came to visit my classroom.
Right.
But there is a boy. The haircut was this boy high functioning, very high functioning. You know, only had a goal in social, and a boy came in and he had a haircut, and the boy goes, "Dude, what's wrong with your hair?" And he was only saying, you know, what did you do to your hair? And the boy got so mad. And I know, but he was just meaning like, oh, you got a haircut. He didn't mean it to say it rude.
Right.
But he got yelled at by the other kid and said, you know, that wasn't nice. And then the regular teacher yelled at him because he says, you shouldn't have said that. I'm mad at him. And that's like the hardest part about having children like this, because they don't get it.
Right.
So it was just basically saying, you know what? I pulled him out. I said, maybe you should have said it, you know, like this. Maybe you should have said, you know, oh, did you get your hair cut?
Yeah.
And explaining to him that could kind of sound rude. And when I was talking to the student, he was like, how could that sound rude? I don't understand. And I was like, you know, it just does sound rude. And I don't know if I totally came across, got it through his head that it was a rude way of saying it, but he did go in and apologize and say, I'm sorry, but it's a continual, you know, you got to nip it in the bud, and that's what happens. There's not always somebody following a child that has Asperger's.
Right.
Say, tell him that.
Right.
I have a friend that has a son that has Asperger's. Actually, this is the boy, and she's constantly working her butt off to get him, you know, all the time saying, you know what, Brandon, you probably shouldn't have said that. You know, you maybe should have said it, you know, in this way.
And that's one of the things with my younger son that I did right, was I spent a lot of time working with him on that. Because with NLD, one of the things he struggled with was facial expressions.
Yeah.
So he would come home sometimes. He was in middle school, I remember, and he came home one day and he was very upset. And I said, what's the matter? He said, my English teacher hates me. So I said, come on. We got in the car. I took him back up to school because I knew they were still up there. And we went in. We saw his English teacher. I said, do you hate Mike? And she was like, absolutely not. And I said, well, can we walk through what happened today? And she walked through the whole thing with him and said, Mike, when I reprimanded you, it wasn't because you were doing anything like you weren't talking out. It was because it was something that had to do with how he wrote. And she knew that he could do better than what he had done. So then she learned something, too, that the way she said it to him, he didn't get it. And he said, but your face was so angry.
Yeah. Oh, that's a big one.
And so those kind of things is what I used to do with him. Any situation like that, I'd go right back and we'd visit it so that he understood, first of all, he was reading that the wrong way.
Absolutely. Does he still read it the wrong way?
Sometimes? No, he's so much better.
Oh,
I mean,
good.
All the work that I did with him, it really paid off.
Oh, good, good.
He's doing really, really well.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Socially, he struggles, but he's really doing much better. Every year that goes on, he's getting better and better. But these kids need a cheerleader.
Yeah.
They need, socially, they need a lot of help.
Absolutely.
It's so sad when I see them alone.
Oh, gosh. It breaks my heart. Yeah. And it happens a lot. Some of them enjoy being alone, you know, and they'd rather just be alone. But that they need that social interaction and that social time. And as parents, you know, helping them set up play dates.
So that's what I was going to say. When Mike was in high school, we moved here from Ann Arbor, Michigan, when he was in eighth grade, and that was very difficult. So one of the things I did is I would call parents, and I'd get kids over to my house,
mm-hmm.
and I'd get pizza, and they could play video games. I was always, like, in earshot, because I used to like to hear the interaction.
Yeah.
So I could go back and say, Mike, so when that happened, what were you thinking when you said this, or what was happening? So that he could kind of go over that. And eventually he made his own friends. He had a great, great 4 years in high school.
Oh, that's wonderful.
He had a great, but what you just said is so true. Parents need to really get involved in that process.
Well, and that, and what happens, we had a meeting last year, and this parent, her son has autism, and she says, you know, we said, you know, does he have, and very socially, doesn't talk to anybody. We're like, you know, does he have any friends at home? Do you have him involved? No. Like, well, what, I don't know. Does he have play dates or anything? She goes, no, he won't go up and ask anybody for phone numbers. And we kind of just stopped and said, well, you know, and we gave her an idea of like, okay, you know, when my son is learning how to be social and ask, it's my job as a parent to kind of facilitate that,
mm-hmm.
make it fun, make it a experience.
Right.
Because they will be so grateful for those kind of things, because the social is, I feel, is so much more important than academic.
Me too.
I mean, academics, of course, we need to learn, but if they don't have that social, and to see them at school so alone, you know, it's really sad.
It kills me. And for the parents that are listening, here's something I really want you to think about. Don't make your kids' school about you.
No.
Make it about them.
Yes.
Don't try to put your kid in a box. So my father wanted me to be a doctor. What a joke. I was failing every single math class I ever took. But his dream for me was that I was going to be a doctor. I didn't have a prayer of being a doctor.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a dancer. I wanted to be a singer.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to play piano. You know, all those things that I wanted to do, I wasn't allowed to do. My boys were allowed to do what their passion was. You want your kid to be happy and successful?
Mm-hmm.
Don't put them in a box.
No.
Don't push them to go to Stanford or Yale or Harvard or... Let them do what they want to do. Let them explore it and find out what their passion is.
Absolutely. Any level of a disability. I mean, we strive in this world as human beings. Doesn't matter if they have a disability, what it may be, is to have a mark in this world. You know, and even if you have a child that's lower functioning autism, that maybe could be in middle school and not reading or anything, there's still a place for you and that child as they grow to be an adult. I had gone to this conference that was through the regional center, and it was about transitioning into college for kids that adults that are going to be out of high school. And it was the most fabulous thing. They had this man that came, and he worked very low functioning. He worked at the courthouse, and he put stickers on the tags on the folders of the cases. And he got up and he spoke, and he was so proud of himself that he got to go to work. He said he took this number bus, and he knew the bus system, like there was like the back of his hand. He goes, I went from here to here to here to here, and I get to work, and I get to put the stickers on the thing, and that's what he did. And he was like, and I get a paycheck every 2 weeks.
Wow.
So proud of him. And he said what he did before was all he did is sit in the house and watch TV. And he said, and it made me feel sad. And just the way he you can tell he lower functioning, kind of staring in the air. And then he says, but now I have a place in life. And I just went, oh, my heart. And I've seen the guy now on different bus stops, which is so awesome. But it just made me think to myself, like, sometimes that does happen, you know, you need to help your child find that place, that niche that makes them happy, no matter how little they are. And through the IEP, you can find that. You know, there's a place in the IEP where there's transition. You know, every child, if you have a child that goes from elementary to middle school, you have to have a transition meeting.
Yep.
You have transition. Then you go from middle school to high school, you have transition. When you go from high school, it's not over in high school all the time. You can have an IEP till you're 22.
College, yeah.
Yeah. So like if somebody had told me this once, a professor said, when 22 comes, it's like the yellow bus stops. You know, they just kind of, it's like all the services stop. And so you need to use these services that you have till 22 at least and learn and educate yourself and make sure you're giving the skills. So when that 22 does come and the child doesn't have an IEP and might not have the services, whatever services they may be, are gone, they are ready to be do what they need to do, whatever it may be. And when they are in high school, it's mandated that they do have a transition and there is work experience. You know, so like all my students that I have that are in middle school, I always check work experience. And what I've noticed is what happens is when they get to high school and they turn 16, the high school places them at a workplace.
Right.
And the workplace gets like state money or something, gets bonuses for educating, for employing people with disabilities. And I've seen so many of my students working. Like I'll see them at the Lazy Dog. There's one at the Lazy Dog. You know, so I see them all over the place. And I'm like, wow, you know,
it's great.
It's that's why I always say that,
you know,
IEP is a golden ticket.
You know, I had heard it was till 26 in California.
No, 22.
Is it really?
Yeah. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure.
Because when I started graduate school, of course, I was, you know, 51 when I started graduate school, but I thought somebody told me at that point in time that in California it was 26. Now, I have to research that.
Yeah, there's a child that lives on my street. She has Down syndrome, and the mom she's 21, and in December she'll be 22,
okay.
And she's, I'm so worried, and I said, okay, let's get, you know, to get, you know, is she working? But I don't know why they don't have her in a job right now. I'm really shocked. I'm like, why don't they have her in her job? And she's lower functioning. She's had a transition program, a work experience. But I said when they transition them out of the IEP, the best practice is transitioning them with something to do, something to have, giving the – but that doesn't always happen.
Let me just say this, though, because when I was in graduate school, I did get accommodations for being ADD.
Yeah,
I got extra time for tests. That was it.
Yes.
So for anybody who has older children who are thinking, because they didn't go to school, but they're thinking about going to school.
Yeah.
They can get some accommodations under the Disabilities Act.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, yeah. They just wouldn't have
the IEP.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's
so before we go on to goals.
Yes.
Because I want to do that too. Tell everybody the difference between the 504 and the IEP.
504 is just the basic accommodations.
Federally,
you have to, by law, follow those accommodations because it's the best for the child.
Right.
You know, and then, of course, by law, you've got to follow up on them. And, you know, I think the laws are changing where they're more, where there's got to be more documentation with it. I can't totally say 100%, but it has changed.
What other kind of documentation would they need besides a letter from a psychiatrist?
I think as the process is, and I'm not too sure because my counselor at our school handles it, that there are some assessments that the school needs to do with the 504 to keep, because I think what has happened through the years is that, okay, you have a 504, okay, we'll do the accommodations, and it's kind of forgot about. You know, you revisit it. Where like an IEP, you have dates you have to be doing. I think they're kind of changing the way the system and making it more accountable on the school to make sure that they're doing the right thing.
Okay.
You know, so it's almost like an IEP.
Which is great,
yes. But I don't know exactly the real
Well, when you find it out, you'll let us know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And what would the IEP be considered?
The IEP is the golden ticket.
Right.
It is the heart and soul of your child. And
is it state or federal government?
Federal.
Okay.
It's federal government.
Okay.
And it is an individualized educational plan. So your child is an individual, and like I keep saying, you know, like you'll ask me about certain, like how could you accommodate, how would you do it, but it's because every child's such an individual
right.
that it's everybody's different. You
right.
know? So when I write an IEP, I strictly just, I don't do two IEPs at once, basically. I believe doing one IEP, you need to really understand what this child is doing to write a good IEP. It doesn't always happen that way, but you know, it is an individualized educational plan to better successfully help that child in the school classroom environment, school environment.
Right.
And very important. And one of the things is like, because we were talking about eligibility statement, which is usually on the first page, it is on the first page of the IEP, is the eligibility. And it will say, like, you know, SLD, OHI, autistic,
right.
like, and then there's an eligibility statement, and that comes from the psychologist. And what that statement states is, in a nutshell, what's going on with this child. So if I pick up IEP and I read the eligibility statement, which, this child is no longer, but that eligibility statement will give me a kind of an idea.
Would it say written language expression,
yes, it should.
Math learning disability?
Yes. There's a discrepancy between the math reasoning and the
right.
math calculation, or, you know, social. There's a discrepancy between the social and academic.
Right.
There's something in there that tells you, and you go, oh, okay, now I know what I'm going to, when I turn the next page, what I'm going to I'm getting a picture in my head who this child is.
Okay.
You know, and not a label. It is just a picture of
a snapshot
of
right.
what's happening. But that statement is pretty important.
Yes.
You know, it's written by the psychologist and is from the assessment that they have.
Right.
They take.
So before we go to goals, let me just say this about testing. If you decided, as I decided the first time around, to have my children tested outside the school system,
uh-huh.
okay, because I got neuropsychs on both of them. So a neuropsych is a really intricate assessment. There's a lot more testing going on. They with my younger son, they actually did the Rorschach, which is,
uh-huh.
you know, the inkblot where you
uh-huh.
hold it up, those kind of things.
Uh-huh.
So if you decide you're going to go outside the school system and you're going to have those tests done, you're going to let the school know
yes.
that you're going to have that done. And then here's what I would do for those of you who are thinking about having this done. Ask the psychologist who's doing the testing to come with you to the school meeting when you make the presentation
oh,
and want the
yeah.
IEP, because they understand the testing better than anybody else. And they can also, if they are run up against discrepancies with the school psychologist, they can argue out that situation
yeah.
right there. Not argue, but discuss
yes.
right there where their findings come from. Because one of the things that I've also done in the past, for all of you who are listening, a school does an assessment, and they say there's absolutely no documented learning disabilities. I still say there's something going on with the child, so I have the parent take the testing to a really good person who does testing and have them go over it. And we actually found in that testing that there was a written language expression that the psychologist missed.
Huh?
So it was very delicate, but we had to go back into the school, and the psychologist was great. She
yeah.
was really great. She understood, I get it, I misread this. Okay, so you have to not leave a stone unturned.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's go over some goals. So if you have a math learning disability, give me an example of a goal.
For math, depends on the area of math reasoning or math calculation.
Math calculation.
It would be geared towards state standard, but I think last time I was here, I talked to you about Common Core.
Yes.
It depends what grade level it would be, you know, for in the area of well, let me kind of step back just real quick. So when we develop goals and objectives, we develop it from the assessment.
Okay.
So you get your child gets tested. We see that your child is low in let's just go from reading comprehension, and there's a discrepancy. So a goal will be developed in the area of reading comprehension. Let's say it's in math too, math reasoning, because usually math reasoning and reading comprehension are one on one, because math reasoning is the reading and understanding and reasoning what is going on in a math problem. So usually those are two that are together. So
okay.
Let's say we got math math reasoning and reading comprehension. Goals will be developed for that student in the area in those areas. And when they're developed, right now we're going through the state standards. So if a child is in eighth grade, I pick a state standard in eighth grade, and knowing the student and kind of looking at what the discrepancy is, you know, math reasoning, I kind of look at what essential standards the state has pulled out of the state standards. These essential standards are ones that they say that a child with a disability must know. Maybe all the other standards they don't have to know, but they need to know these essential standards.
Okay.
And like I said, because No Child Left Behind and Common Core are coming into the new kind of standard, they're changing the standards, this is all going to be different soon.
Okay. Right.
By 2015, it is 2015, the state of California will be changing their standards. But at this point, we go from an essential standard bank that is pulled from the standards, state standards. And from those, that's how we develop. And what they do is the goals are written in 3-month periods.
Okay.
Short term objective goals. So you have an annual goal, which annual means every year
you do an IEP.
Every year you
Although
do an IEP.
Although you can call one anytime you want.
Yes, you can call one anytime you want.
Right.
But what they say is that a child, when you ask a child to, you know, for instance, complete something at 90% accuracy, you know, you're just saying, okay, you need to do this goal in 1 year. They say for a child that has a disability, like we talk about the writing, you need to break it into smaller pieces. So if you want a child to do something at 90% of the time, you need to break that goal into 3 objectives. So it can go from 60% the first objective, and then 3 months later another objective, and then another objective.
So that add up to 90.
So yes. So then by the time that they get to
the year,
they should be able to accomplish it. Okay. Now, if a child every 3 months, your child will get a progress report from the special education teacher. They should be getting a progress report
on
from
the
short-term objectives.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll see three sections, and it usually goes. God, I always do this. I have a piece of paper on my desk that I always have to look at. I can't remember the dates, but no matter what, 3 times a year from the IEP, you should be getting progress reports.
Okay.
And in those progress reports, there's a summary of the progress. And sometimes they call it short-term objective, or they call them benchmarks.
Okay.
So, and in the short-term objectives or benchmarks, the teacher will write a summary about the progress. Okay, this is what your child is doing. You know, they are not meeting their goal, or yes, they are meeting their short-term objective goal. If they don't meet 2 of their benchmarks, remember there are 3. If they don't meet 2 of them, it must be revisited.
Oh.
So you have to revisit, because why even have the goal if they're going to be,
right.
Obviously, if they're not making it, then this goal isn't really good. You got to backtrack and figure out what, you know, what's happening, you know, but that doesn't happen a lot because it's a lot of time,
right.
And a lot of effort,
right.
And, you know, so sometimes that doesn't happen because the success is by a year, that child must meet that goal,
okay.
You know, and if you have 3 benchmarks and twice they're not met, there's no way that child is going to meet it,
right.
Like that, you know. And so that's a really, really, really important thing to know.
So what happens if up to a, you know, say you get to a year and this kid has not met their goals? Do we do the goals again for the following year, or do we retest? What happens at that point if they're not?
If they're not meeting the goal, you could either modify it. Sometimes I will continue it. Usually I will, but I'll modify. But usually when I do goals, if they're not meeting the second benchmark, I usually revisit it. I will always revisit it because
okay.
I'm going, oh, gosh. You know, to me, I get afraid with these kind of goals as a case manager because my job is to make sure that they achieve these goals and I show documentation that they are meeting the goal. And so if I can't and it's not coming there, then I definitely will revisit with the parent. It doesn't necessarily have to be a big meeting where, you know, but, I mean, if there is a change, you know, you need the case manager and the
so that's
parent.
Called an amendment to the IEP.
IEP. But I'm
right.
telling you, it doesn't happen a lot. So it parents, you have to be on that.
So, in other words, for the parents who are listening, if you really get into the goals that your children, you're involved in the goals, you're seeing what the goals are at the IEP meeting, and then you're not seeing
progress.
That your children are progressing, that it's your job to call the school.
Well, I would be on it. I mean, it should be the school's job to do it,
but
it doesn't. I'm telling you, I don't
see it. Not everybody's like you,
yeah,
Michelle.
No, I'm telling you, it doesn't, because they
no.
get so busy, you know,
right.
you know, they get so busy and people, you know, so it's, you know, I probably have maybe one parent in my 10 years of teaching really say, well, not for me, but she was on another parent, on another teacher, and she was like, well, why did you say, like, benchmark met? How did that child meet the benchmark? How do you know that child met that benchmark or that short-term objective? I don't understand. Why is it? But that's what basically usually happens. And the goals are what is strengthening that discrepancy. So if a child is in math or in the reading math reasoning and reading comprehension, the goal is this individualized educational plan is to strengthen those
right.
discrepancies
right.
so we can close the gap. So eventually, hopefully, if it's either done right or your child maybe has got that, you know, the ability to get that gap closed, then they can, you know, DNQ out of an IEP eventually, you know, doesn't qualify anymore. But that's what the main thing about, and if the goals and objectives aren't being addressed right, then, and they're not being showing, you know, a documentation and being assessed and done correctly, then the gap is not going to close.
Right.
You know,
and you know, there are situations, oh my God, we only have 4 minutes left. This went so fast. It was great.
Yeah.
There are situations where, you know, special ed teachers, and I've had this myself with my own kids, you know, have to do certain things with kids through the course of the year.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of times parents, and if you don't pay attention, your kids aren't being pulled out. This stuff is not happening.
Yeah.
You need to ask your kids, are you seeing such and such teacher
mm-hmm.
once a week or once every 2 weeks, whatever it is? And if this isn't happening, you have the right to go back up to school. Call up the school,
yeah.
make an appointment to go in there and really find out what's going on. Because, you know, Michelle, in my 20 years that I've been doing this, Michelle is an absolute yeah. angel. She's
Thank
amazing.
You.
The way she works with kids, she loves what she does. I'm sorry, but I have not found
Well,
a lot
you.
Of teachers like that. So she's really, really a find, and I'm so grateful that you are willing to come on these podcasts.
Yes, definitely, and I know that we are almost done here, but please, an IEP would not be an IEP without those goals being met. That is why you have an IEP, and you won't close that gap. You know, every time I think about it, I think about this huge gap that you see. You don't want your kid to have a huge gap. The
No.
purpose of an IEP is to close the gap. And if that gap isn't closing, the only way it's going to close is when the goals and objectives are done right.
Right. And the way to really test if that gap is closing is in 3 years when the retesting is
Yes.
done. You should see that gap closing, or you should see the processing number
Yep.
coming up. You should see working memory number coming
Uh-huh.
up. All those things should be better.
Yes.
So Michelle is definitely we're going to get her back.
Yes.
Maybe in a couple of weeks she'll come back and we'll talk about some other stuff. I really want to talk about difficult behavior issues in school, and I think that would be great to talk
oh,
to you
yeah,
about that.
Definitely.
And also talk about your soccer team. I want to get
oh,
you back
yes.
for that. That
yes.
would be great.
We started yesterday. It was wonderful.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
And I hope all of you learned a lot about 504s and IEPs. We're so happy that all of you are listening. And again, this is Miss ADD, and I will not be here next Sunday. There will not be a podcast because I'm getting married next Saturday.
Congratulations.
So, thank you. And Sunday, my family's still going to be here, so we're going to spend time together. So I will see you in 2 weeks, and I will definitely let all of you know what the show is going to be about. But for now, I want to say goodbye and remind you, if you're in the L.A. area, to come by our support group on Wednesday nights for adults with ADD, 7:30 to 9, at the Center for Learning Unlimited. Okay, everybody, stay in the moment. Take care. I'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
That goes so fast.